వా గణపతిగుం హవామహే కవిం కవీనాముపమశ్రవస్తమం జ్యేష్ఠరాజం బ్రహ్మణా బ్రహ్మణస్పత ఆమశృణ్వన్మోతిభిస్సీద సాదరం శ్రీమహాగణాధిపతయే నమః సదాశివసమారంభాం శంకరాచార్యమధ్యమాం అస్మదాచార్యపర్యంతాం వందే గురు పరంపరాం. ఆత్మస్వరూప బంధుగణం. So we were looking at the 13th verse of the 4th chapter. We finished it. We will now take up the 14th verse. You may say with me, Namam karmani limpanti, name karma phale spruha, iti mam yo bhijanati, కర్మ భిర్నసబధ్యతే. ఇన్ గీత వైల్ శ్రీకృష్ణ టీచర్స్ టు అర్జున, హీ మెయింటైన్స్ ఏ పర్టికులర్ యాటిట్యూడ్ టువర్డ్స్ ద టీచింగ్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్, ద టీచర్ స్టూడెంట్ రిలేషన్షిప్ అండ్ ఆల్ దాట్. సీ, హీ కెన్ టాక్ లైక్ దిస్, శ్రీకృష్ణ ఇస్ భగవాన్, Arjuna is a human being, a limited being, who is in serious trouble, who is a limited being, who is bound by the samsara, who is a small knowing and who has a very small power and who is in trouble permanently. So that kind of a person he is. Whereas Bhagavan is all-knowing, all-powerful and so Bhagavan is the cause of this entire universe. So there is a very big gulf between the Bhagavan and the Godhead and the individual. And so keeping that gulf intact, Bhagavan could say a few things. He could say, Beta, you worship me, I will bless you, I will send you to heaven, I will give you a lot of wealth now, I will give you that, I will give you this. You follow my word. If you do not follow it, I will push you to hell. I will punish you. He could say all those things. Like a king addressing one of the subjects, one of the hapless subjects. A king addresses in a particular tone, with a particular attitude. So all these things are there. Bhagavan could talk like that. But that is not the situation at all. I presented the negative situation just to highlight the positive aspect of it. What is the positive aspect? Bhagavan says, Hey Arjuna, you and I belong to the same reality. We are two birds of the same tree. Dva Suparna Sayuja. You are my friend, I am your friend. Bhaktosime Sakha Cheti. We are eternal friends. That is how he presents. And so, you see, there is Prakruti on one side and there is Atma Chaitanyam on the other side, Vivekaitis. So, and you see a human being, he looks at himself, there is a physical body and there is an identity with it and there is a world in which this physical body, it functions. And so, that is Prakruti. And then, that is the world really. And then there is Ishvara, who is the cause of this world or this creation. So this jiva, who is caught between Ishvara on one side as the cause of the universe and the world on the other side as a reality which the world he takes to be real around him. So between these two, where is the jiva fits? Suppose you get up in the morning. On one side you have this samskara of worshipping the God. And on the other side, there is world. You have to live in that world. You have to function in that world. So where do you belong? Where do I belong? Generally, people take themselves to be belonging to the world. As long as you take yourself to be belonging to the world, you cannot know the truth. Because world is not the truth. World is false or unreal. So you are putting yourself in an unreal substratum. You are identifying with the unreal. It is like you are dreaming something. Maybe in sleep you are dreaming, or maybe daydreaming. Sometimes daydreaming is also there. So I sit like this and I dream. So I am giving a public talks in New York City, Mahanagaram, and then thousands of people were attending my public talks. My goodness, there is so much coverage. Like that, suppose I am dreaming. Now, while dreaming, I am living in a world. Dreaming is what? I am living in that world, right? Now, what is the reality of that world? It is unreal. So while spending even a little time and a little effort, I am investing in that world, right? I am emotional investment is there in that world. Otherwise, why you call it daydreaming? There is a smile on my face. When this huge audience has cheered me, there is a smile on my face. And when there is some problem, there is a frown on my face. So I am living in a world. And how real it is? It is unreal. And I during that minute, 10 minutes or 5 minutes, I have invested myself into that world. And that investment is a useless investment because it is unreal. So, I do not belong to the world. I belong to Ishvara. So, this truth one has to understand. And Gita tells, you are with me. You are in me. You are me. That is the teaching. And once you understand that, then the world follows you. It is like shadow. World is a shadow. If you are looking at the shadow and running behind the shadow, it will elude you. It will never come into your grasp. Stop looking at the shadow. Look at the sun and move towards the sun, sun of truth, sun of Atma. Then the shadow will follow you. It won't remain behind because it cannot exist without you. World is a shadow of you. There is no your shadow, what you project outside, that is the world. Therefore, if you see a child was crying, the mother, it looked at the child. Why the child is crying? But there should be some reason for the child to cry. Just now it has consumed milk and it is nice. And why it is crying? The child was looking at a mirror. And it is trying to hold the head of the child that is seen in the mirror. It is trying to hold the hair. Children like to hold to the hair. So it sees a head with a lot of hair in the mirror and it wants to hold to that hair. It is unable to hold because that mirror, right, is so soft and so smooth and so you can't hold on to it. The child is trying to hold to that hair and it is unable and so it is crying. The mother came. She wanted to console the child. So what the mother did, it took this hand of the child and made to hold its own hair. Then it saw the hair is held in hand and the child is happy. That is the world, I tell you. Vishvam, darpana drushyamana nagari tulyam. You want to reform the world? You want to have the happiness in the world? Be happy within. Discover the inner happiness, then the world will be happiness. The world is your projection. There is no other world. You find the world very frustrating. Don't try to take care of the world's the frustration that is found in the world. You see whether probably that frustration is a projection of your own inner frustration and address that inner frustration and then look around, there will be no frustration. So, a gentleman said, the world is very greedy. I told him, see whether there is some greed in your heart and address it and look around. You won't find any greed in the world. So, the imperfection that you see in the world is your own imperfection. And whatever perfection that you see, whatever joy or cheer that you discover in the world, you are indeed discovering it within yourself. You are in Ishvara, you are with Ishvara, you are Ishvara. This is the teaching. Gita's overall teaching is this. Any number of times Bhagavan points out to Arjuna, hey Arjuna, the only difference between you and me, there is no difference really, but there is a difference felt, experienced. A division is felt. The only difference that exists in our experience between you and me, that exists in your experience, is that of knowing and not knowing. I know, whereas you know. This he says, Again and again. He says, Bahunime vyatitani janmani tavacharjuna, tanyaham vetha sarvani, natvam vetha parantapa. Hey Arjuna, this verse I have told in the fourth chapter only it came. As far as taking birth is concerned, you too take birth, I too take birth. But I know all about birth and other things associated with birth, whereas you don't know. Therefore, that makes a very big difference between you and me, that knowing and not knowing, that is the only difference. It brings in a non-existing difference into play. Therefore, you know as I know, the way I know. You and I are one and the same. This is how he teaches again and again. He doesn't say, oh Arjuna, you be devoted to me. He says, Arjuna, try to be me. That is the ultimate goal. Even if we talk of a little devotion, some devotion, its goal is to recognize one's essential oneness with Ishvara. So, this is how the tenor of the teaching is like that. And that can be recognized in this verse in a very profound way. He says, this is how I am. Namam karmani limpanti. Name karma phales pruha. This is how I am. Suppose you know how God is, what is it that you, what benefit you get out of it? Except satisfying some curiosity, what benefit you get out of it? Suppose I know all about Air Force One. Air Force One is a particular jet aeroplane in which the President of the United States travels here and there. That is Air Force One. If I know all about Air Force One, you can visit online and know all the details about it, what kind of an engine it has, engine or engines, how much space it has, so what kind of seats they will be, what is its inner design, etc., what is its cost, all this information you can get. And people who know such information are considered scholars also. Really? So all this information, suppose I get. What it will help me? Essentially, it won't help me anything. Finally, I have to struggle for my visas and for my stamps and for my seats. I have to go through all this hassle of travel. That information doesn't help me in any way. So, if I know Bhagavan, he created this world and he is sustaining it and he annihilates it at the end. And so in doing so, he has a certain attitude towards the whole show. So by knowing that attitude of Bhagavan towards the creation, sustenance and annihilation, in which way he does it, what is his mindset in doing all these big things. So if I know that, what is my advantage? I have more information. It is like knowing there are crows in heaven are white. So what kind of information it is? So that kind of a thing it is. Air Force One is something it is before you. This crows in heaven, it is just further imagination only. So, Bhagavan's attitude, if I know, what is the benefit? The benefit is, there is a reason for it. You have to know. The benefit is, iti mam yobhi janati. Who knows the outlook of Ishvara towards the few things that he does. If you know that outlook, and if you also understand the same outlook is true in your case also, then the bondage of karma comes to an end. Iti mam yobhi janati karma bhirna sabadhyate. You see, karma is there with Ishvara also. Karma is there with Jiva also. But Bhagavan knows about the truth, knows the truth about the karma. He knows correctly. Karma is an action. So, with reference to action, what is the truth? He knows. And therefore, he remains without the bondage of karmas. In spite of the presence of karmas, Bhagavan is not bound by them. And if you know the way Bhagavan knows, if you also know, then you too will not be bound by karmas. That is the thesis. Therefore, you see, you will be happy. Bhagavan is happy. You will be happy also. If you do like Bhagavan does, that is not the teaching, that is not the proposition. Because you cannot do that anyway. Bhagavan is happy. He knows this way. And if you know the way Bhagavan knows, then you will also be equally happy. So the only difference between Bhagavan and Jiva is that of knowledge. There is no other difference. And it is the knowledge which makes you one with Ishvara. It is the ignorance that separates you from Ishvara. So this is the very strong proposition in Gita, and that is brought out very poignant way in this verse. Iti mam yobhijanati karma bhirna sabadhyate. It is like, the way I know, if you also know, then the way I am, you are also the same. That is how the teaching is. Anyway, what is the outlook of Ishvara with reference to various karmas? Namam karmani limpanti. Name karma phales pruha. Karma is action. It binds a person in two ways. One, it binds the person by way of doership. With reference to this karma, I am the karta. Already there is a bondage. You see, karma is in the outside, karma is without. So every aspect of karma are without. Karma is action. It has a few karakas. You need a few karakas. So implements of karma for any karma to happen. So karma is happening because the implements of karma are in place. Karma is happening. So now where is this karma happening? Without. And then where are the implements of karma? Without. So when karma is happening without and the implements are also in the without, then how is it that karma can taint me? When everything is without, how is it that it taints me? Because I have a wrong attitude about my connection with that karma. That is how it taints me. I take myself to be the doer of that karma. So this is how I connect myself to the karma. Now the question is whether karma attaches itself to me or I attach myself to the karma. Where is the hook? Is it that the karma throws a hook onto me and binds me? Or is it that I throw a hook onto the karma and bind, get bound? Where are the hooks? We talk of samsara bandha. Where are the hooks? Hooks are with you. The world has no hooks. It doesn't throw any hooks. Suppose you have a Jesse Penny shop is there. Or some other a very attractive shop is there. Now you are attached to the shop, suppose. You means not a person sitting here, generally. There is some attachment. Now who is throwing the hook? Whether Jesse Penny is throwing the hook to me or I am throwing the hook to Jesse Penny? It looks that he is throwing the hook to me. But finally I end up to throw a hook to him, to the shop. I get attached to that. I said casually, Jesse Penny, the world is like that. So, as far as the world is concerned, there are only rings and rings and rings. All the hooks are with us. The world has no hooks, it only has rings. And hooks are with us and we throw hooks. And we throw hooks, we tie up that here to the waist and throw the hook. And now you say, I am bound, I am bound, I am bound. So the world has only rings, it has no hooks, all hooks are with us. With reference to karma, the hook that we throw is doership. This doership is a very powerful hook it is. People, they perform a few actions and now they take themselves to be the doers. I have done this, I have done that. And now, so they carry this burden of doership forward in life. It's a big burden. A person having performed the action, he cannot walk away. As a free person, he cannot walk away. He is always looking at that situation. Even while physically walking away, mentally he is bound to the situation, saying that, I have done that much, I have done that much, I have done that. So that the kartrutva buddhi, the doership, is one particular way that we are bound to the world. That is one way in which karma binds us. It is said like that, karma bhihi badhyate, karma bhihi na badhyate. So it is not that karma is binding us, we are getting bound to the karma. But the language is like that. So it is our misunderstanding about our situation, vis-a-vis karma, that binds us to the karma. Whereas in the case of Ishvara, there is no such bondage. Namam karmani limpanti. The actions do not taint me. Lepa is tainting. There is no tainting to me by virtue of the actions. What are the actions performed by Ishvara? Three. Srishti, sthiti, laya. These are the three actions. You see, a king is there. The king says, I am ruling this country and I have constructed these projects, I have constructed these dams, these buildings, these highways, I have done all these things. That is what the king says. But Bhagavan, he never says like that. Bhagavan has created the galaxies, the stars, the planets and all life forms he has created. He doesn't say, all these glorious galaxies I have created, all these stars and planets I have created. He doesn't say that. In fact, he says, I seem to be the creator, but really speaking, I am not the creator also. He says that. He doesn't say, you see, I met a Mahatma. The Mahatma told me, Swamiji, I have made 10 ashrams. So a Mahatma example I have given a king example. I made 10 ashrams. And on average, I have some 500 sishyas in each ashram. Now I have 5,000 sishyas. And the target is to make this number to 50,000 in the coming 2 years. So, Bhagavan doesn't talk like that. Bhagavan doesn't say, I have created so many jivas, so many lokas, bhuhu, bhuvaha, suvaha, all these lokas I have created. All these jivas I have created, he doesn't say any of these things. He says, you from your standpoint, you may, oh Bhagavan, you are the creator, srishtikarta, dhata, savita, you are the protector, like that, you devotees are saying to me, may God, maybe it is all okay with you, but then from my point of view, I am not the karta or any such thing, vidhya kartaram avyayam, I am not the karta. How I have explained in the last class, therefore, this bondage of karma in the form of doership, it is not there. Namam karmani limpanti. That is one bondage. It is not there for Ishvara. Then, name karma phales pruha. So, for me, there is no craving. Spruha is craving for the result of action. Karma phales pruha. The greed or craving for the result of action, I do not have. That is what Bhagavan says. You see, very, very interesting statement. You see, a pot maker, he makes a pot, which will be broken sooner or later, maybe soon only. He makes a pot, and he then thinks that I made this pot. In fact, he calls himself the pot maker, as if intrinsically, as Atma, he is the pot maker. He takes himself to be like that. He doesn't assume that I appear to be the pot maker. He doesn't understand that way. I am in a given context, I appear to be the pot maker. Really, I am not the doer. So like that, he doesn't think. He lives with an understanding, with a false understanding, that he is the pot maker. So, this is how he doesn't make pots during the entire life or any such thing. He makes pots occasionally. And but for the entire life he takes himself to be the pot maker. You see, what a misfortune. So, that is how he gets stuck. So, everybody takes himself to be the doer in various ways, and thus they are all stuck with the samsara. They are bound by the karmas. So, really speaking, There is no doership in Atma, but they don't know that. And then the other point is the doership, the second thing is enjoyership. I have to get the result of this action this way. There is a craving for the results of action. This craving has its origin in the enjoyership. So it is mutual, it is. It is mutual. So there is craving because he is enjoyer. And he became enjoyer because of the craving. It is mutual, it is. So person, he lives a life by establishing himself as the enjoyer. Human beings, they live as bhoktas, the life of a bhokta. So this is a samsara. Kartrutva bhoktrutva lakshana samsara. So the samsara, what is samsara? You see, Bhagavan has no samsara. Being the substratum of this entire creation, Bhagavan has no samsara. We live identified with a speck of a body in one small corner of the universe, and we have so much samsara for us. Why? What is this samsara? So samsara is, we perform actions craving for certain results, and in that performance of action there is dukkha. Because karma dukkham. Karma is painful, you know. So there is suffering in the karma, physical suffering, mental suffering, whatever. And then the results, we crave for the results, and so there is a relentless flow of sukha and dukkha. So alternating cycle of sukha and dukkha, pleasure and pain. That is samsara. And then as a doer and an enjoyer, we accumulate so many karmas, because the karmas and their results go and attach themselves to the doer and enjoyer. So because we are throwing the hooks all the time, so all these things are they bind us, and therefore to face that bondage, to enjoy the consequences of that bondage, we take another birth. This body comes to an end, so certain karmas brought this body into existence, and as those karmas get exhausted, this body falls, and another body is manufactured by new set of karmas. So janma, maranam, again janma, birth, death, so the cycle continues. This is samsara. In a given life, a relentless alternating a series of pleasures and pains, and life after life, this continues. This life followed by another life, death, birth and death continue. This is how short range samsara, long range samsara, it is there. Whereas Bhagavan, he has no samsara. Because only this much difference. Bhagavan doesn't look upon himself as karta bhokta. Namam karmani limpanti, name karma phales pruha. Namam karmani limpanti, I am not the karta. Name karma phales pruha, I am not the bhokta. Iti mam yobhi janati. This is how one mam is Bhagavantam. Bhagavan is speaking. So Lord is like this. So you understand the Lord this way. Lord is not karta, not bhokta. So he creates the universe. He doesn't claim the doership. I am the creator. He doesn't say that. Only bhaktas say. Bhagavan doesn't say. If you ask Bhagavan, he says, I am not the creator. He also says, you are not the doer also. He says that. Even scriptures, they do not enjoy in actions in a positive way. When they enjoy in certain desire-based actions, kamya karmas, the purpose of the shruti is to pull the person out of tamoguna. Person is a tamasika. Essentially, he tamasika means what? He wants to eat and rest. This is tamasika. Picnic is what? Florida or Hawaii or Bahamas, what is that? Cruise, they talk of a cruise. What we do in the cruise? Eat and rest, right? So, rest could be sleep, or it could be just lying down without doing anything. Shabbat or some other thing. Not doing anything. So, eat and rest. This is a human tendency. And there is a huge industry to promote this eating and resting philosophy. The tamoguna it is. So, left to himself, the human being degenerates into tamoguna. So, don't live like that. Because what happens? The body becomes sick and degenerated. Along with it, the mind becomes sick. So the person will ruin himself or herself. That should not happen to him. He should be guided properly. Shruti is meant for human guidance only. Therefore, you work, I say. Why should I work? No, by working well, by working in this direction, you will go to heaven. That is what Shruti says. Heaven, what I will do? You can eat better than here. And you can rest better than here. Why? How better? Here if you eat, you will get stomach pain. In heaven there will be no stomach pain. Here eating is there are many pitfalls associated with it, many problems associated with it. Sometimes if the people get accustomed to a particular type of eating, then the pocket, the money is not enough to support that kind of eating. Food can be very costly. If we get accustomed to some of these luxuries, it could be costly. So, I tell you, you can eat better there. And then if you rest here, you will get all kinds of problems, heart attacks, diabetes, this and that. Whereas in heaven, there are no problems. There will be no heart problem, no cholesterol problem, no diabetes problem, no insulin problem. You can really enjoy. That is better. So then what shall I do? You do agnishtoma, kamya karma. Agnishtomena swarga kamo ejeta. Shruti is not interested in creating this kind of a greed in him. But the person needs it. Gudajifika nyayam, I told one time. He needs an attraction, an enticement he needs. So he is now doing kamya karmas. While he is doing kamya karmas, then Shruti enters really into his life. If he cares for the teaching of Vedas, it enters into his life and says, the kamya karma attitude in life is bad. Shruti doesn't mince the words. It emphatically says, you are performing actions, all right, may God bless you, but all your actions are desire-based actions, ragadvesha-based actions. So, these ragadvesha-based actions, has another name for it. That is a lifestyle in which rights play a major role. That is what is called. You see, it could be a Vedantic language or it could be the modern language. But the thing is only same. Thing is same. It's not different. So in the language of Gita, we call it ragadvesha-based actions. To put it in a more modern way, that is actions which are aimed at securing one's rights, securing and safeguarding my rights. I have certain rights, First Amendment rights and all that. So I want to secure and safeguard those rights, and for that I act. This is a rights-based approach. That is one lifestyle. The Vedic vision is opposed to that. It just doesn't sanction such a lifestyle. It stalks very much against such a lifestyle. Then how the life, you see, when we talk of kartrutva, bhoktrutva, you don't bring in some silly, small vision-based example to me. I am talking, in Gita we don't talk of some, just now I have taken a cup of coffee, am I karta or not? That is not the issue. Did I not enjoy that coffee's flavor or not? We are not discussing of that. When we are talking of kartrutva, bhoktrutva, we are talking of an attitude, a vision of life, a life's vision, that is what we are talking about. And first understand the life's vision. Then these small actions and the kartrutva, bhoktrutva associated with them, so how to look at them, everything will fall in line automatically. First you understand the overall vision of life, how Vedas present the overall vision of life, how Gita looks at it. So we say A lifestyle based on rights is wrong. A lifestyle which is a self-centered lifestyle, because I am intent on securing and safeguarding my rights all the way. So, you see, I met a young man in Germany. Not that I went to Germany, I was in Frankfurt airport, and so I met him. So, he had some interest in Indian philosophy and all that. So, he asked me, he was discussing with me. So, then he told a few things about himself. He was, he's 30 year old, he's working in some university, and he is not living alone. He is living with another young lady. So, they are living together since the last 10 years. Then casually I asked him, why don't you marry? No, there are some problems associated with it. Like what? You see, before really tying the nuptial knot, I have to take care of my rights. I have to secure my rights. I have to safeguard the future. That is what he told. I was stunned. In India, they just marry without looking about the next day. What will happen the next day also, they don't think. So parents fix a marriage and they get into marriage and they live with that marriage whole life, whether it is good or bad, they stay with it. Whatever it is, Yamadharma Raja has to separate. The local judges, etc., they can't bring any separation. Anyway, whatever it is, so here you see, he is looking at a thing called marriage. In which way he is looking? He is looking... The entire life he is thinking of, what will happen after 5 years, after 10 years, and then in the old age what will happen, and then finances, what will happen to those finances, like that he is looking. In a given context, probably he is doing the right thing, probably. I am not against the whole thing. I am talking of a vision of life. So we are constantly engaged. We are very much intent to secure our rights and to safeguard our rights, secure them and safeguard them. This kind of a lifestyle, it brings so much insecurity, concern, worry. We are doing everything wrong in that area. Then how to live a life? What kind of life we have to live? Duty-based lifestyle. I am intent, the emphasis in life, my only commitment, my entire commitment is to do duty. Duty-based lifestyle. Suppose somebody asks me, if I live like that, what happens to my rights? Then you have not understood anything. Because what happens to my rights, that question you have asked means you have not gained this vision. Because in this vision, the word rights is not there. No, suppose I take to duty-based lifestyle, what happens to rights? No, you cannot take to duty-based lifestyle. You cannot, it is contradiction in terms. Then what about rights? No, you should not ask that question. The question is not there. In Indian philosophy, we don't talk of rights. In Vedic vision, it is an extreme, it is. If you want to say that way, please say it. There are no rights. There are only duties. And then a person may say, oh, come on, this seems to be very logical. There will be no happiness in life. You are mistaken once again. The true happiness is there only in duty-based lifestyle. And even while trying to secure rights, you are creating incurable insecurity and worry for yourself. It is like Department of Homeland Security. Even while spending billions to get security, even while making that effort, we become more insecure. This is what I read. New York Times, day after day after day. This is not my interpretation of the news. The New York Times not only gives news, it gives interpretations also. The last but one page, there are some authors who give an interpretation of it, that week's news, that fortnight news, month's news, they interpret them. And they analyze them. Social analysis, sociological analysis they do. I read that analysis. You see, it was said, after the arrest of Saddam Hussein, the world is more safe. And within 3 days, some Christopher, somebody wrote, after the arrest of Saddam Hussein, the world and America has become less safe. That is what he wrote. And figures and analysis, etc. So, you see, once again, please understand, I am not interested in a politics-based criticism. That is not my aim. I am not interested in that. I am saying, at the social level and at the individual level, the more we strive for security, the more we become insecure. Because you are looking for security where it is not. You are looking for security around. There is no security around, I tell you. Around there is only death. What security you have? Antah purusha rupena kala rupena yo bahihi. There is only death around. Sun is a manifestation of death. Yosau tapan nudeti sa sarvesham bhutanam prana nada yodeti. Even as he is rising in the east, he is taking away, drawing away through his rays the life span of all life forms, and thus he is rising. Yosau astameti, asau yostameti, sa sarvesham bhutanam prananadaya astameti. Even while he is setting, he is taking away our lifespan. He is diminishing our lifespan. Along with him, he is drawing away into himself, and he is setting. What security you are talking about? And all our, did you invest some money in securities? Then forget about security. What security you are talking about? Then where is the security? There is only security in Atma. There is nowhere else security. Abhayam vai janaka praptusi. You know Atma, then you have known abhayam, security. Therefore, so that is the ultimate truth. And you take a step in the direction of the truth, you are going towards security. You take a step in the opposite direction, you are getting mired in more and more insecurity. Therefore, the duty-based lifestyle alone will bring you happiness and security. It will elevate you. It will take you, it is the step towards truth. And rights-based lifestyle is wrong, it is. Therefore, you see, suppose you pay to the coffee, $2 you pay, and he gives a token. Now you have a right to collect your coffee. If he says, no, I will not give you coffee, then you have a right to collect it. I am not saying you lose that right. I am not talking on that level. I am not interested in the specific applications and all that. Everybody has to work it out for himself. I am talking of an overall life's vision. And one should try to see if this vision can come into one's life. That is how it is. Suppose at present I am handling an issue, and I have to be practical about it, and I have to handle it in the appropriate way. I can handle it. I need not bring namam karmani limpante etc. into it. But I should live a life in which this vision reflects, this vision percolates. So that is how the Vedanta philosophy is always like that. Science and philosophy, see, in science, we try to focus on the thing narrower and narrower and narrower. Whereas in philosophy, we try to expand the vision wider and wider and wider. So one should not confuse one with the other. They are two different approaches, two different visions. Therefore, in a given life situation, how one should function, that is a different thing. But the life's vision is like this. A life of duty-based lifestyle. This is one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it. You see, while performing an action, I take myself to be the doer. Why? Because I started this action with a craving for a certain result. So I want that. So first I fix the result and then start the action. So once I fixed the result first, this is what I should get. And if at all I have to act, I will act for that sake only. So now I have first established myself as bhokta. Even while taking myself in my vision as the enjoyer, I have lost contact with the present and I have already invested into the future, because the result is never in the present. As of now, only karma is in the present. Result is in the future only. The result that you are talking of, the result of this particular karma, when you talk of a karma and its result, karma phalam, karma is in the present, karma phala is in the future. And now a human mind has this weakness. It wants to fancy the future. Human mind, if you give it a half a chance, it dissociates itself from the present and it tries to reach out into the future. So, this attitude of looking into the future, dividing time into past, present and future, that division itself is illusory. It is not a real thing. There is no past and there is no future. There is only present, which is the presence. That is the truth of it. But it takes a little effort to appreciate that truth. Therefore, so you imagine a future. Future is, what is the locus of future? Where is this future? You think of it. Where is this future? Where is time? What is the locus of time? Kant says time has its locus in the intuition of the mind. Mind intuits time. Therefore, that is about time. Now come to future. The future, I will give you the locus of the future. The future has its locus in your imagination. That is the locus of future. And what is the quality of that imagination? You can imagine. Because we take ourselves to be isolated egos in isolated bodies, which is the ultimate of our ignorance. And now we know what is the basis of our imagination. It is all wrong, I tell you. Therefore, you look at the future and already you want the future to be that way. That is the bhokta. And that bhokta now acts to secure his bhoga. And action is in the present. His mind is invested in the future. Action is in the present. That itself is a big conflict. Big gulf it is. And therefore, maintaining such a gulf, you cannot be a creative actor. I mean, creative action is ruled out. A painter who started painting on a canvas, he starts imagining this painting will be finished after 3 days or after 3 weeks. Then I will put it in a gallery and Sotheby will sell it for $1 million and I will get 50% of it, $500,000. Then I will be living in Astoria or whatever. And so he imagines like that. And then his painting, at the best he will end up by creating a mediocre painting. He cannot, a creative work cannot come out of that kind of a mindset. Therefore, the craving for the results, it kills creativity. The moment I am the bhokta, the enjoyer, and start an action on that basis, then I am a doer automatically, because enjoyer is the doer and doer is the enjoyer, they go together. And so the creativity is lost. There is no more creativity. Because there is this ragadvesha, this kartrutva bhoktrutva, it creates such a chatter in the mind that no creativity is possible. Creativity comes out of the silence of the mind. How mind can be silent? first recognize what is the noise in the mind, then you can know what is the silence of the mind. The only noise in the mind is ragadvesha. And that is kartrutva bhoktrutva based thing it is. There are ragadvesha have their origin in kartrutva bhoktrutva. So doership and enjoyership. Therefore, a mind which is infested with this intense ragadvesha, ahankara, that ego, and also that enjoyership, very obsessed with craving for the results of actions, etc. So in that mind, silence of the mind is not possible. And in such a mind, the creativity which has to come out of the Atma, it will be covered up, and so there will be no creativity. Some mediocre actions only will be possible. So, you just stop looking into the future. Be in the present. How? Your craving for the results of action drags you into the imaginary future. There is no future except imagination. So the mind is dragged into that kind of an imagination. So thereby we lose the joy of the present. And in fact, there is a joy, a fulfillment in acting in the present. And that kind of a joy and fulfillment in acting will be gained only when we stop reaching out into the future in terms of the results of actions, craving for the results of actions. Therefore, so this can be put in a slightly different language. So selfish work, unselfish work. We can use that kind of language. I used the language of duties and rights. We can use this language. So selfish work or self-centered work means, self-centered work means what? Kartrutva, bhoktrutva based work. Or ragadvesha based work. The self-centered work, that is on one side, unselfish work. So in the self-centered work, the silence of the mind cannot be achieved. It cannot be a creative work. It will remain a mediocre work. And it will make you tired and exhausted at the end of it. Whereas unselfish work, so you work cheerfully, enthusiastically for the sake of others. That means as a duty you do. So not to secure the rights, but to fulfill the duty you work. That leads to the silence of the mind in the sense that there will be no ragadvesha. The ragadvesha chatter is absent. The mind becomes pure in the sense that ragadveshas are not intense anymore. So, because that indifference to the results, you are willing to work with indifference to the results, then you do not worry about the means also. People who are willing to work indifferent to the results on a purposeful path, of course, duty means what? On a purposeful path only. So, purpose is different from result. So on a purposeful path only we will travel, but the craving for the result is not there. That indifference comes into the picture. That means you start stop looking into the future. You stay with the present and you work. So then you will not complain about means also. With inadequate means also you will be able to gladly work. And also I am not gifted to do this work. That kind of, I am not well equipped to do this work. These kinds of frustrations, they will just disappear. Because you are not craving for the results and you are in the present. And the kartrutva, bhoktrutva problem is not there. Ragadvesha burden is not there. So you do not ask for recognition. You do not even care much for the assistance. You just do what needs to be done, leaving success and failure in the hands of Ishvara. So you go through the necessary movements, duty-based movements, and you just function merely as one of the links in the long chain of causation. You just fit yourself into that link. It is a long chain of causation. In this universe, everything is caused by everything else. Once, one goldsmith, he told, I made this necklace, I am the cause of this necklace. Then the other person told, Not only you are the cause of this necklace, the sun is cause of this necklace. How? How sun is cause? Yeah, without sun you would not have been there. The moon is cause of this necklace. Jupiter is cause of this necklace. This universe is like that. So everything is cause of everything else. Then what am I? I am just one link in the long chain of causation. And where is this causation? Where this causation rests? It rests in Ishvara. As far as I am concerned, it rests in Ishvara. Ishvara is the Karta. So the supreme power, the higher power, which runs this huge show, it is the Karta. I am a link, a purposeful link in the long chain of causation. Like that, when you work, then that mindset, it becomes transparent to the inner creativity. And so, a creative art comes out of it. Therefore, the kartrutva, bhoktrutva, they are the real samsara. The rights approach, the intensity to gain rights, that is the major problem of human existence. So, this is how Bhagavan looks at the truth, and we are also advised to look at the truth that way. Iti mam yobhijanati karmabhihi nasabadhyate. So one who functions this way, who performs actions, the necessary actions, as inspired by his duty consciousness, without craving for the results, etc., he identifies himself with the present and doesn't bother about the future. Do your action, your work, and surrender the results to Ishvara. So, then karma bhihi nasabadhyate. Here Shankara, he says, the opposite, he says, yashantu samsarinam aham karta ite abhimanaha karmasus pruha tatphaleshucha. So, these are the samsaris. How to define a samsari? The samsari is the one who takes himself to be the doer. Aham karta ite abhimana. Earlier I mentioned to you, abhimana is the same as ajnana. Abhimana and ajnana are one and the same. You see abhimana anywhere? Abhimana is a me, mine syndrome. That is abhimana. So if you see any abhimana anywhere, you understand that it is ajnana. If you see the same thing in you, then that is ajnana in oneself. So, I am the karta, that is the abhimana, karmasu tat phaleshu cha spruha. So karmasu spruha tat phaleshu cha spruha. There is a craving with reference to the actions and also their results. What is the craving with reference to actions? I am the doer. That is the craving with reference to actions. I am the doer. And with reference to results, the craving is, I should get those results, I should enjoy those results. That is the enjoyership. So, such people, they are the samsaris, they are tainted by the karmas, they are bound by those karmas, and so the karmas, they will bring their results and push their results these people's way. That means, the karmas, they will make these people sukhi and dukhi, and also they will make them take birth once again in different life forms. Then the opposite of that is, na aham karta name karma phale spruha iti. So I am not the doer. This is the philosophy. I am a link in a long chain of causation. I am not the doer. The doer is a higher power, is the doer. Then what is the way to conduct myself in life? Because there is a body identity and there is a sense of a limited being. So how to conduct myself? You perform those actions which do not reinforce the falsehood. I mean, you perform, so even while choosing an action, suppose you choose an action based on ragadvesha, the choice is wrong. You perform a good action, again inspired by ragadvesha, the approach is wrong. Action is correct, but the approach is wrong. So the corollary, the outcome of the discussion is, number one, all adharmic actions are dropped, because adharma is always inspired by ragadvesha. Therefore, all adharma is dropped. Because ragadvesha, they stop inspiring the person. Even while holding on to certain ragadveshas by habit, you drop adharma by discipline, then that discipline becomes spontaneous automatically. So that is the first step. In the second step, even while performing the dharma-inspired actions, we perform with a sense of sharanagati. I am a link in a long chain of causation, and the higher power is acting. I am a link in its ways of acting. So that way, you act without craving for the results of the future. So while acting this way, when actions take place, then automatically there is no bondage. Bondage is not there means we are what? Na dehadyarambhakani karmani bhavanti. So in such a situation, karmas will not bring another birth. And the cycle of birth and death will come to an end, and one recognizes his essential oneness with Ishvara. I tell you one simple example for this attitude. In the Vedic culture, we have a regular prayer called Sandhyavandanam. That prayer is there. This prayer, it is introduced into the life of a kid. At the age of 8, it was introduced. And so, he performs a Sandhyavandanam without knowing what for he is doing it, without ever having any idea of what results he will get out of it. People do this Sandhyavandanam. They worship the sun, both morning and evening. They worship Ishvara in the sun. They worship the sun means worship Ishvara in the sun. It's not the sun worshippers. So they relate to Ishvara in the altar of sun through a mantra called Gayatri, for which Devata is the Savita, sun is the Devata. That way, so they do a worship 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the evening. They do it. Why they do it? Because they have to do it. That question doesn't arise. Even if the question is raised by somebody, the answer is, it is the duty, nitya vidhi it is. It is the duty, and therefore we do it. Will you go to heaven by doing it? I don't know. Will you get wealth by doing it in this world? I don't know. Will you be more healthy by doing namaskar to Surya Bhagavan? Will you be more healthy? I don't know. So, you see, suppose you are worshipping the sun. So, I will be healthy, I will have stronger muscles. That way you are worshipping. Again, you see, the sanctity of the worship is gone. If health has to come, it will come. Health is not permanent in any case. Arogyam, it is going to, it is like everything else, like money is there. Money will go away. It will stay for a while and it is lost. Even health is like that. When the body is going to die, what to speak of health of the body? Therefore, health is needed, all right. But while worshipping the Lord, we don't bring all these pictures into the mind. You worship the Lord because you have to worship. Then what happens? You will get the health automatically. This is a yoga for health. That attitude is what I am saying, yoga for health. The attitude is wrong because you have already brought the yoga to the level of some aerobics or some such thing. The pills for health, health pills level, we brought it. And then yoga for pets. Pet yoga will come afterwards. So that I am cheerful by yoga. My pet also will be cheerful. So both together will perform yoga. So this way what we do, the central message of the teaching is lost. The central message is a lifestyle based on this understanding. I am not the karta, I am not the bhokta. That is the central message. That is the overall vision about life. The rights are not, my emphasis is not on rights. My emphasis is on duties. Rights will be automatically taken care of. When the husband performs his rights, his duties, wife's rights are taken care of automatically. Wife need not struggle to secure her rights. And when the wife performs her duties, husband's rights are taken care of. And if both are intent on their duties, there is no conflict. The moment you bring the word right, the conflict is not at a distance. Conflict is there only. You know where it is, the conflict is there? Conflict is there within that securing right itself. The moment you are trying to secure your right, you are sowing the seeds of conflict. The moment you are intent on performing your duty, the conflict cannot come near you. It will run away from you. Because that duty-mindedness, the duty consciousness, it has that kind of a sanctity. That glory is there in it. It is Ishvara. Duty-minded, duty is Ishvara. Ishvara is not elsewhere. Ishvara is in that attitude committed to duty. And duty is the present. It is not the future. Duty is in the present. While remaining in the present, leaving future in the hands of God, that is karma phalam is in the future. You leave it in the hands of God. You stay with the karma. Thereby, you will discover a real joy in life. The nature of the duty may be very simple duty, it could be. It could be the duty of a cleaning duty, dishwashing duty, it could be. Or it could be the duty of a king. Doesn't matter. So you may be less educated or more educated, doesn't matter. You may be ill-equipped or well-equipped, doesn't matter. You may be very skillful or with less skills, doesn't matter. The moment the person commits to duty and doesn't crave for the future results, thus he is one with Ishvara, he is in the present and his mind is calm, his mind is silent, it is rid of all this chatter of raga-dvesha, and thereby he will be one with Ishvara and he will cross this ocean of samsara very easily. This is the message. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hare Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hare Om Tat Sat Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.